Lance Dawson, Hello. The co-host of Backstage Lowdown. Is that really you? Can I get your autograph?
Hang on a second.
Are those new headphones? You're very shaky. What's going on with your camera? I have a lot of questions.
You have a lot of questions.
Are they new headphones, and why is your camera so shaky?
No, it's not.
Is it going to happen the entire show?
I hope not. Well, relax, dude.
Aren't you already supposed to have this all figured out before we get on?
How's this? It's not shaky. Can you hear me?
No, the voice, your voice is fine. It was the camera that was annoying.
How about now? Steve, we have a bad habit. If we just start talking and an hour later, it's all over and I haven't even introduced you. And honestly, it happens
every single day.
And people are like, who the hell was that?
Who was that guy anyway?
Who was that guy? Anyway, welcome everybody to Backstage Lowdown. I am Lance Dawson, who along with my co-host Andrew Stewart, get an opportunity every once in a while to talk to some really talented individuals, mostly so far Canadians, some in the area, some not. Today is no exception. We are with a buddy of mine, Steve Hogg, who is an incredible musician and a really good guy. And I'm looking forward to catching up because I haven't seen Steve in a long time.
That's true.
And one of the things that I was going to introduce you, you've already mentioned Ian Thomas and that you played and toured with him back in the day. And when I was doing a little bit of a deep dive, just, you know, maybe to fill in some of the gaps that I don't know about you just because of our relationship, I didn't know that Ian Thomas was Dave Thomas's brother.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. I don't know why I didn't know that. I just didn't know it. So anyway, okay. So there you go. I'm marginally smarter now than I would have been had I not said, hey, let's get to talk to Steve Hogg. Where's your mic, Steve? Are you using the mic on the Mac?
No, I'm using this.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that looks official. Okay.
It's an Apex 306 or something, or 360 or something.
Sounds nice.
Nice. This is great. Sounds this good. Is the first musician really we've interviewed where I can actually see like a cool Vox amp, and this is awesome.
Yeah.
Finally some gear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. That little one, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I would have put more instruments in the back here, you know.
Yeah.
I have some keys here. Yeah.
I'm concerned that you have like nice gear and you have a dartboard right over them. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, but that's got my name on it.
What?
Hold on. I'll get the dartboard. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay. His amp is there. And then there's a dartboard right over the amplifier.
Like not even an inch.
Sorry, I'm using my, earbuds just because they're easier to use than my headphones.
Yeah, for sure.
No, so, I'm just marveling at you must be one hell of a dart player or you don't really care about your gear
Can you see this?
Oh,
yes. Oh, cool. Your 19. Name is on there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So I take it you really don't play darts on that dartboard then.
It's from GRT Records, which I had a record deal in 1976. I signed this deal on GRT Records, which Ian Thomas was on GRT Records at that time. And Ross Reynolds was the guy in charge. So we signed the deal and we did some demos. And then the record company got bought out by somebody, Universal or somebody, I forget.
Right.
So the deal, I never got released, but I made it to the dartboard. And so that's all their artists they had on at the time, which are interesting selection. See, Ian Thomas is on there and a whole bunch of people you'd never heard of before. Ralph Murphy. Wow. Is that right? And Klaatu is on there and Dan Hill, Lighthouse, Tom
Wow,
Cochran.
Dan Hill too.
Yeah.
Lighthouse was on that album or that label?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just figured that's how they chose who stayed on the label from year to year.
Maybe.
Throwing the darts.
So I didn't know about the dartboard. And then John Harris, who has a place called the Harris Institute in Toronto, that's like a music industry, you go there to learn about recording arts and, you know, different things. He phoned me one day and said, hey, I've got a dartboard from GRT that I got. It's got your name on it, which is always an intriguing statement. So he sent it to me in a pizza box.
That's awesome.
One day. So yeah, I had it hanging on the wall. So it's from the 70s. So I'm surprised that it hasn't just, you know, come uncoiled.
I'm just excited that it's not being used and then it can hang over your amps. So that makes sense.
I have kids, so you know, they may still throw things at it. I don't know.
You imagine. Anyway, Steve, welcome to Backstage Lowdown. Thank you for doing this with us today.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Steve, yeah. Nice to meet you. I'm Andrew. Oh,
nice to meet you too, Andrew.
We've been kind of talking over you while you've been trying to get in. And Lance,
that's all right.
Wasn't kind enough to introduce me. So
I did mention you in the intro.
Yeah, I think so. That's a fine Scottish name, I think, guys.
Well, I got it from my grandfather.
Okay. Andrew Stewart. There you go. Yeah, that's a good one. That's right. My middle name is Andrew as well. So there we go.
Easy to remember.
Pronounces your name like that. They put a lot of
Andrew Stewart.
Yeah, exactly.
The right way to say it.
This is the right way. That's right. Everybody does.
I'm wearing the Stewart clan shirt right here.
Beautiful.
That's what that's
like. I still actually haven't been over to Scotland, so I'm not sure really how Scottish I am, but you know,
okay.
I keep it in my heart.
It's there. There you go. So Steve, you've been a semi-busy guy, if not really busy guy, since things have opened up a little bit again. I've been seeing you've been advertising your back, playing a bit of the circuit uptown and doing some things. Yes.
Yeah, it has opened up a bit. I think a bit of a flurry lately, because see, once they said it was open for restaurants and bars, all of a sudden the phone started ringing. So that's a good thing. And I mean, it definitely had to get the rust off and get out there and go, you know, oh my God, I got to go out and sing for 3 hours, something that I hadn't done for a while. But I'm happy, yeah, to be back. And other opportunities are also opening up that I had done, as far as, you know, the Jeans and Classics thing that I played with. That's just starting up. Just got an email from them. And I don't know, just some other live stuff, hopefully some other live shows, because I like the variety. But it's nice to be back, even in the pubs.
I get the Bigman's emails, and I saw that you are hosting Lulu's on New Year's
Eve.
I'm hosting Bigman's Lulu's, this Broadhouse band. I'm getting there. Having difficulty with words.
I don't think I did a great job of introducing Steve, because I didn't take in the breadth of, you know, so... Yeah, Steve can, he can play any pub in town and just sit there with his guitar and entertain for 2 or 3 hours. But then he's also a session player in studios for people. He swings into the Jeans and Classic band that works with the KW Symphony Orchestra. And also, of course, is one of the founding members of the Lulu's Roadhouse band. So for anybody that's over the age of 35, they might remember that Lulu's was a super cool large in Canada back in the day. And they had all sorts of Canadian and American acts come through Lulu's. And so as such, they had the Lulu's Roadhouse band, the house band, that had to be a really solid band. You can't have the largest bar in Canada with a shitty house band and have these great acts coming through that these guys would open for. So I've always thought it was very cool that I know at least two members of that founding band, you and Mikey T. So So anyway, just to fill in the gaps, you are a very storied musician in that regard, right? And now you guys are back for New Year's Eve.
Well, yeah, we've done a few... We did maybe 2 or 3 gigs this year, just a few things we picked up. And it was like, it was in doubt as to whether we would do the New Year's thing, because, you know, but all of a sudden, like, again, as soon as they said, okay, go ahead, you can have people in there, I think they kind of dove on it and went, okay, let's do it. Cause it's, we've been doing it for, I don't know, 15 years or something at Bingerman's.
That's awesome.
So it'll be fun. Hopefully we can get, I mean, right now, any place I've played has been fairly rammed with people, and people are very appreciative of what you're doing. Like, they seem almost more appreciative than before. Like, they seem like very happy to see live music again. So that's been a nice bonus on top. So hopefully, I mean, people want to get out as much as they can. So maybe New Year's will be back up to capacity. We'll have to wait and see.
Keep the fingers crossed.
That is exciting, actually. I agree. I just did a run of 3 different gigs, and you're right. Okay. There's people coming out, and they seem to be a little more appreciative, I guess. Really interesting, though. I feel for the bars. I know they've been hurting, and I also understand that the last thing they want to do is offend or turn away any of their regulars. But two out of the 3 places that I played
in the last month. Two out of the three, I did not see a lot of QR code checking whatsoever.
No,
the third was good. The third, but
it seems a little lax. I agree, and I think they're just trying to, like you say, they're trying not to scare anybody off. Right. So they're kind of being minimalistic, and maybe that's, you know, that's not a good idea because it doesn't send a very good message. And if it has any bad consequences, they're going to be back where they started. So, I mean, they weren't checking performers like we're being sort of treated like the staff or anybody else. Right. So I have yet to show my QR code to anybody. Like nobody's asked me yet. Yeah. I have it on my phone and
you're all ready to go.
I'm ready to go. I'm like, I want to show it to somebody.
Yeah.
Show it to us. Before we do we have a policy on who's on the podcast?
Am I supposed to be vaccinated? Masked on this show?
That's right. I think we're wearing masks.
No,
in your own house.
No, we're we're a clean bunch here. We're good.
We have the filter
also like on. I'd like to know about your mom's measles and rubella history as well.
Yes, exactly.
That's right. Have you ever been to Costa Rica? yeah, no, you're right. We don't want to send it back because no one wants to get shut down again. But
now I gotta go to Jeans and Classics. I was supposed to go to Florida this past weekend.
Okay.
I was supposed to play in St. Petersburg, the orchestra there, and I passed because 3 weeks or a month ago things were looking pretty bad in Florida. I just went, I don't think I want to go.
Right.
So I had to weasel my way out of my gig. And now I'm supposed to go to Texas in January.
Jeez, you're hitting the right states, buddy.
I know.
Florida and Texas. So, holy cow.
I know how to pick them. So now I'm kind of, I don't think I can get out of the Texas one. Like there's a problem with, because flights are booked and you can't switch off. I was able to trade off with somebody for the Florida show, but now it looks like I'm going to Texas, which sounds like a country song, but Lance and I are going to write this song.
That's right.
It looks like I'm going to Texas.
Exactly. Well, you know what? The truth is, and maybe this sounds cavalier to people and maybe I'll get canceled because of it, but if we believe in the efficacy of the vaccine, and I do, you'll be fine. I think maybe we're just at the point where the stubborn and stupid will not survive, but you will because you're vaccinated. So good for you. I mean, what do I know? Do we get a QR code?
Yeah,
that's right.
Tell us about the Texas show. What's going on down there?
Apparently, I'm going to play a Queen show with Jeans and Classics. So we'll play with the orchestra in Big Spring, Texas. And it's a show I've never played before. So basically, we're going in with a rock band and singers. And apparently, the Queen show, we'll play with the local orchestra. So we take their music and give them the music. We have one rehearsal. And then apparently, we also have a choir when we do the Queen show. So I've never done this show before. Right. So there's a couple of newbies in the band, me and the drummer. I don't think I've ever done this show. So you get one rehearsal. You're supposed to know what you're doing. Yeah, thanks.
Well, Queen and is a little bit more than three chords. I mean, that's going to be tough, man.
I know. It's tough stuff. Jeez. And I don't know Queen stuff that well. So I've got my music. I'm supposed to be reading my music, something that I'm not very good at. It's a skill I learned late in life. Probably the first time I started doing Jeans and Classic shows, they were looking for an extra bass player and about 20 years ago. And it was like, I don't really read that well. Is that a problem? And so my friend Don, who got me in the show, he's sort of like, well, just don't bring it up that much, you know, like, learn the show and they'll never know. Right. Sort of thing. But now I'm a better reader than I was because in most cases I'm up there with a 50 piece orchestra and a band and I'm the worst reader on the stage. So that's
nobody
never
knows
a good
that,
feeling.
Though.
I do.
Well, you know that, but nobody, the audience doesn't. So
no. And you know, if I do a Fleetwood Mac show or an Eagles show, I have a fairly good fighting chance getting through the show because I know the stuff quite well. But some, like you say, Queen is not easy.
No.
And I don't know a lot of the songs. They're kind of difficult because they're very orchestrated and not your average pop tune.
Yeah.
So
and bringing in, like you say, the choir, I'm sure for Bohemian Rhapsody and a few of the other songs, there's lots of places where you're not playing. You kind of have to.
Well, that's true. Yeah. At least I know Bohemian Rhapsody. At least I've played that a few times. So
yeah,
that's one I know. So
there you go.
So do you bring your own equipment down for you or do they do the rentals and you pick it up down on that end?
Yeah, they'll hand me a bass. So it's usually, I've been fairly lucky. Look for some wood to knock on. I've only had one where I said I can't play this. It's just, you know, can you find me something else? So actually that worked out fantastic because one of the bass players in the band, like the upright, you know, the double bass players said, well, I've got a bass at home. And that sounded even more scary. So he left to go and get this bass. And I'm like, oh my God, what's it going to be? You know, oh, right. He happens to have a in the closet. He comes back with a 1961 Fender Jazz bass.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, so that, you want to sell that?
That should do the trick.
That should do the trick. And sure. It was just gorgeous. And it had the same pickups as in my bass. And I was like, do you want to sell it? Like, I was just like, I'd like to buy this bass. And apparently he had it stolen. It had been gone for 15 years and his friend found it and he got it back and told me a whole story about it. But generally, to answer your question, no, we show up and there's like backline and PA, like a sound company that's usually quite good. It's usually handled quite well. And then we're mostly in ears, which I hate, but then that's, you know, we have a monitor man and so on. So
when you say that, so you're referring to the monitors, right? That you have in-ear monitors.
Yeah.
So you can hear what's going on.
This is what I use. These are my in-ear monitors that I use in Jeans and Classics. And they've offered me like $500 Sony in-ears and all these different systems that I don't like. I like these. You know where I got these? I got these on WestJet. $10.
Thank you, WestJet.
They're WestJet. See right here?
Wow.
WestJet.
Nice.
WestJet.
Look at
that. That comes with a nice little case.
Yeah. $10. And you get,
That's pretty good.
Extra little buds to change the ends. And I tried them and they have great bass response. So
I have a technical question for you. That's probably not going to be interesting to our 8 listeners, but I struggle.
We're
up
to about 60 now, dude.
Are we?
Yeah.
Wow. We're doing okay. Well, after we launched with Steve Hogg,
we love you, listeners.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's right. I struggle because I should be every time I'm rehearsing and probably playing, I've got specially designed earplugs so that I don't go deaf, which is happening over years of standing next to a drum kit. Right.
Yeah.
And, but I really struggle vocally because it makes me sound to me absolutely horrible when I'm trying to sing and I have these earplugs in and then I feel like, oh, I'm not hitting the notes. And so I stop singing. Well, it's just this whole cascade effect of awfulness.
Yeah.
And then I take them out.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not alone in that one.
No, I went through the same process. I've tried various ones. I had the ones where they pour the stuff in your ear to mold.
Yep.
So then it hardens and you take them out and then they build, they drill it through and they put the plugs in. And I bought those for like, I don't know how much money.
Yeah.
And then they were stolen. So I hope they fit whoever stole them.
Exactly.
What a weird thing to plugs, you know. Yeah.
It's kind of,
no, they stole my case. Oh. They stole my case and they were in it. So then after that, I just went, well, you know what? I never liked them anyway, because of the same reason. Whenever I put them in, you get that claustrophobic, I'm in a tiny box trying to sing sort of feeling. And I couldn't hear the air in the room, like the ambience of the room, and the drums and everything. And there's nothing nicer sounding than when you take them out and everything goes, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
I couldn't. I've tried the foam ones. And so I've just gone back to just, you know, I'm in the room, stay away from cymbals as much as I can and guitar players, you know. You're probably deaf in your left ear and I'm probably deaf in my right ear because the sides of the stage were on. So, but yeah, I don't know. I don't have any solution for you other than bigger stages.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do. Play bigger stages.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. This is this is not my story, but a friend of mine that I used to play with all the time, he was in a band once upon a time that got a gig at Lulu's opening for Billy Ray Cyrus. So they went from the A-level bars like the Ranch and Guelph, that sort of thing. All of a sudden they are on the Lulu's stage. They'd never been on anything so big in their life.
Yeah.
And they thought this was incredible. They spread out. This is cool. We can move around. And halfway through the first set, they sucked. They said, we couldn't hear each other. We had no idea what was going on. It was a totally different experience. And so they stopped their set. They quickly grabbed all their instruments, right back together. So they're now like 3 feet apart and finished the set and sounded great because they could hear the harmonies. They could hear everything. But he said, everybody thinks it's so great to get this big stage, but you have to know what you're doing. You have to be used to that. You know, because whenever we all rehearse in like closets and stuff, right?
So that's right. And you're right. When you play in bar stages, there's barely room for the band. And you've got the bass player's elbow in your face. And, you know, it's like, I agree to a certain degree on big stages. Some bands I've played with, we have tried to condense it for that very reason to go we want to be within, because it's not just sound, it's like body language, where you're used to reacting to somebody who's only like 2 or 3 feet away from you. So
you can see
if somebody's over there, you can't really tell what they're doing. And you start to feel like you're not playing in the same band anymore. And the only place you're hearing them is out of your monitor. So I think there's good reason to try and keep the band, you know, maybe centralized in the middle of the stage somehow. And I mean, it's hard when you're an opening act, because everything is set up where it's set up. So they just say, go here.
That's what you deal with.
You stand. Yeah. And you get two lights and, you know, you get like four channels on the board and the ones that don't work. So
don't
B
care.
Acting is never any fun. So, you know, I sympathize.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, that sounds actually pretty cool. I love the Jeans and Classic. That whole concept of putting a rock band and an orchestra together and then, you know.
Oh, it's really fun.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. Now, what about studio session work? I mentioned you're doing some of that stuff. Are you recording with anybody in particularly, or are you doing any of your own stuff?
Yes, to all of it. It's been fairly sporadic. Over the pandemic time, I have been writing and now got Logic Pro. So I'm the last engineer I would hire, because I've always been, anytime I've ever worked in studios, I've always had somebody, a partner, who is the tech guy. And he's like doing all the tech stuff. And I'm over here being creative and going, let's record this. We'll run out in here, do this, that, and the other. So I was always sort of like, I know how it all works, but I never focused on learning it that well. So when I have to do my own stuff, I'm like, oh my God, I'm the engineer. Oh, geez. You know, and
Lance
I always
plays
find
in that,
that
same sandbox.
I do. Yeah. No, Steve's right. I've spent more time trying to be creative and less time understanding, you know, GarageBand is as far as I need. Cause then I bring it to somebody else and say, make this.
Yeah. I've got all these parts. Can you make this work? Well, I got GarageBand. I used GarageBand for a few years. And then I moved to Logic, and Logic is jumping in the deep end. It's the same general thing, but it's like with GarageBand, you open a door and there's a couple of choices there you can go. With Logic, you open a door and there's a hallway with other doorways, and all those doors have hallways, and you just start going, okay, I'm just going to close that door. I'll look after that later.
There's a lot to get
into. There's too much to get into, and you have to make decisions. So I'm trying to go, okay, well, I'm just going to make simple decisions, and then I'll go back to that and go, okay, now apparently I can do this. So it's been a bit of a learning curve, but I've really enjoyed it. So I've been doing my own stuff. I was doing demos for a friend of mine so I can practice on them, and recording and mixing and sort of playing the instruments myself and doing that. I also did some online recording for a couple of different people. So I'm playing bass and acoustic and then sending the tracks back to them, which is kind of cool, because you can, you know, record in your pajamas and just, you know, do it on your own time. And
and really work with anybody around the world as well, too, when you do that.
Well, that's very true. Yeah, that's very true. So that's a whole different concept. And I'm hoping to do more of that, because now I have Logic. I have some good. I was always sort of nervous before. I was sort of like, well, I don't know if I'm getting good sound or not, you know, relative to going into a studio. And now I have a nice interface and I have Logic, and I go, no, I think I'm getting decent sound. I've got a good instruments. And then I've been into Cedar Tree and done some recording for Rick Hutt, for some various people in there. So it's sort of different versions of recording. Like my friend I was doing demos for, he's releasing that stuff on Facebook and YouTube and Spotify and whatever the platforms are, Bandcamp. And we've made, you know, like he says, we're 100 errors. You know, it's small amounts of money, but you just go, oh, well, you know, I'm getting paid to learn to be a better engineer so it's been good for me on that level.
You know, it's really interesting to me. It always has been, Steve, is that anybody that can make a living being a full-time musician or just being in the music industry in general has always to me been a huge success. It doesn't really matter the dollar value at the end of the year, but
do you know somebody who's doing this?
Well, I thought that was you. I've always looked up to you because that's your thing. Like, he's either playing
with that guy anyway,
you know, he's getting phoned down to Texas. Yeah, I don't know. You know,
who is that guy? I want to talk to him. Yeah. I think it's funny, actually. In the late 70s, somebody gave me a book by a guy in California, and it said, How to Make Money in the Music Business. And of course, I did the standard joke, there's a music business? You know, so
there's a book.
So I looked at this book and I sort of waded into it. And it was all, if you have a band, your band should be modular. In other words, if it's a wedding, you need to be able to have material for a wedding band. Maybe you've got a girl singer. Oh, look, they only need a trio. So get rid of the keyboard player. Just go into this gig as a trio or a duo, or only they want a horn section. Like you've got to be able to, they want R&B. You know, you've got to be able to change the band all around so that you could do these different gigs. Now, back in those days, we had a band, we had a repertoire. These are the guys in the band. Nobody came to play in your band. You didn't play in other people's bands. That was your band. So right. I looked at that like, well, how the hell would you do that? You can't do that. And then it's like, you should have some other connections so you can go and play with other people's bands. It's like, well, I don't know their material. I don't know. What the heck would I do? And he had all these kind of things. Basically, he was describing what is going on now. And he's like, you need to do recording for people. You need to do, you know, all these different kinds of jobs as a musician. And I was like, well, I can't. I'm putting all my energy into this band because we're going to make it, you know.
Right.
So it seemed, I just tossed the book at that point. And now when I look at what he was saying, I go, that's pretty well what I'm doing. I'm playing in several bands. I'm doing recording. I'm writing. You know, tomorrow I'm going to play at a funeral memorial thing at noon in Cambridge. And I go, that's a weird gig. You go, but when somebody calls you for it, you go, yes, I'll do it.
For sure.
Then you go, what am I going to do? Because every song you sing is inappropriate. You know? There's a line in every single song that you go, oh, I wish I hadn't just sung that line. Oh my God. And probably nobody's really noticing, but you are, right? It's like, you know, you can come up with any number of songs where you go, well, that was inappropriate. It's like this fella died of cancer. And it's like, my son says, well, don't do sounds of silence. You know, sure. Silence like a cancer grows. And I go, geez, I wouldn't even have thought of that.
No.
So he says, well, what do you do? And you say, well, you sing silence like a circle grows, you know?
Sure.
And nobody will even notice, right? So you have to do that. But I'm just saying that gig is just like, it's an odd gig to do. It's different. But if you don't just go yes to everything and go, well, yeah, I can do something that'll be appropriate for that. So the then it's just one more thing. Yeah, it's all music and it's, you know, yeah.
So I also was asked to play at a funeral one time. Okay. And I was given, not carte blanche, but they said, look, we don't have a particular song, pick one. And so at the time I heard Green Day and they had sang what I thought, I know any of the listeners that actually know, but I thought the name of the song was called Time of Your Life. Does everybody remember that song? It's very apropos.
The time of your life. Yeah.
Right. However, it was brought to my attention that after I played this Graveside, mind you, it's actually called Good Riddance. That is the title of that song.
I didn't know that.
You know, I didn't know that. It's like what's the Bobby O'Reilly? Everybody's like Teenage Spirit, right? It's like,
yeah.
That's not the name of the title, or that's not the title. Yeah. The same thing. I'm like, oh, this has got to be Time of Your Life. It's in the chorus. They repeat it. Of course, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
I sing it at a funeral, think it's very apropos. And then somebody pulls me and said, that's an interesting song choice. You realize that's called Good Riddance. Like, are you kidding me? Oh, yeah.
There few people that actually knew the name, though.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Well, I'm saying
I'm crossing that one off the list for tomorrow, then, for sure.
Yeah, I might be the poster boy of inappropriate song choices. So just so we're all clear.
Okay. I think the example is just that there's so many different things that you can do as a musician, and that's how you're going to survive. That's how you're going to be a musician, is to go, yeah, whatever. You want me to play accordion tomorrow? I don't really play accordion, but I'll be there and I'll do whatever it is. Now, it's like my friend Craig had a pub gig in Burlington, and he says, oh, we don't have a drummer. He says, we need a drummer. And he says, you've got drums, right? I said, yeah. And I said, yeah, I played drums when I first started. And he says, well, do you want to play drums for us? And I was like, I'm not a drummer. But then Craig said, he says, yeah, but you're a good musician. You'll do the right thing. And I was like, well, that's an interesting phrase. Yeah. And I said, okay. Because I was like, sure. And I was like, no one's going to be more critical of the drummer than me.
Right.
Completely.
I'm a bass player. And I was like, I'm a groove guy. And I'm just like, so it was like, oh my God, I'm the drummer. So it was like, other than the fact that I will never want to load drums in and out of a club again, it was like so much work. And when I got there, I took my drums out and went, I don't know how to set these up. I've only ever done it once, you know. So I'm like,
then it just sat 20 years ago. That.
Yeah, the band's all standing around, like, "Are you ready? Like, are you ready to go?" And I'm behind. Hold on, hold on. And I start playing and go, "My snare's too low." And then I change it and go, "My snare's too high. My snare, this is the tom's too far away." And it's just like, by the end of the night, I had them right where I wanted them. And then it was over, right?
Time
but my point
down.
Being, it's like, again, just say, yeah, let's go there. I'm a musician. I know how to play drums. Yeah. And so you just go, it's just a pub gig. Like,
yeah,
I'm probably better than everybody in the audience as a drummer. So, sure. You know,
there you go.
I get to be up here.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's, I think somewhere to answer your question, I think the way to survive these days is that you need variety. You need to be able to do jack of all trades in that respect. I think if you're just one thing, it's going to be harder to survive because you're waiting for that gig. If you only play funerals, you know,
for sure.
Right.
Then, you know, you're waiting for that gig to show up. So you got to be ready and able to go and do different things.
Yeah, that's no, I would agree. That's a good advice for anybody out there too. And you have to get to be a certain level to be like your friend pointed out, you're a good musician. You're certainly good enough to make the right choice even when playing an instrument that's not your primary thing, right? So
yeah, I think so. You know? It's like me, I definitely, you're not going to try accordion, but I mean, you know, probably if I had to go up there and play organ or something behind a band, I go, well, I know where the chords are. And I can make sound over here. Don't ask me to solo. Don't ask me to, you know, do anything crazy, but
you can fill it in.
I can fill it in. I can, again, make good choices and go, I'll be here just supporting things. If, you know, making the right noises, and I might not get hired again, but you know,
yeah. But you're at that level too, right? I remember being at an open mic night one time, and open mic nights are really interesting to me because you get a very large cross section of musicianship.
Right.
And I remember quite often there actually are a really nice opportunity for musicians just starting to play out to get up because they don't have to have a whole set. They can just do one or two songs that they're really
do their party piece.
Right. And then they're out and then they get better at playing live or something. But I just remember seeing this one young person got up and they couldn't sing and play at the same time. And so they weren't at that point. And it was, you know, it was just hard. It was hard for the audience, hard for them.
One or the other.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I just thought, I just think somebody should have pulled them aside and said, yeah, you're absolutely, this is your within your wheelhouse. You'll get there, but don't do it yet. You have to be able to do both at the same time.
Well,
right?
I'll tell you, my first gig, my friend Dave and I lived across the road. We both had our Kent guitars and we had practiced, we knew a bunch of instrumental stuff. So we were at this dance and my friends had gotten up there and their band was lip syncing to records. They weren't actually playing. And I'm like, where I'm looking at me going, that's not right. You know? And so Dave and I said, well, we're going to play the next dance. Right. So we go there and of course walk in with your guitar, you know, everybody's like, ooh, he's got a guitar. So it was like the dead of winter. It's like December, January, something like that. So we left Dave's house and we walked down to the arena and went upstairs to the community center and we set up and we started playing the first song and my $69 Kent guitar was still like frozen from being outside. So we're wildly out of tune.
Ooh.
Like Dave and I, we're like playing and we're not used to being out of tune because the guitars, we just stayed in the house and they just stayed in tune, you know. And in those days, when you have tuners, we used to tune to the dial tone on the phone because it was about an E. Anyway, that's an old guy
Holy
story.
Cow. That is an old guy story.
And my mother had a crystal glass that if you flicked it was a B. So I could tune my guitar to that. So we got there and we played and like about a song in, everybody's like heads are sort of going sideways because our two guitars are like not in the same key and it's sounding and we don't know what to do because we've never actually tried to even sort of tune to each other. But so after about a song and a half, the girl comes up and she says, perhaps you boys should go home and practice.
Ouch.
So it's like, this is my first gig. So we had to pack up our guitars and walk back through the same crowd. Now, you know, with their heads down and leave. And so I go, I got fired from my first gig, you know? So you go, that's how you start. I'm thinking about this guy who can't sing and play together, you know, and you go, well, you know, I can't show up and play in tune. So, you know,
no,
you
that
go,
sounds
okay.
Like a technical error. You didn't understand what heat and cold do to wood. That's different.
It doesn't matter. It's all part
still,
of the
it's
gig,
still your
you know?
First gig.
That's right. If you don't know that, it's like, so you go, okay, get back on the horse, you know, like figure out what the problem was. And like, I know, get home and Dave goes, I think we were out of tune.
You think?
Yeah,
oh,
really.
Oh my goodness.
So somehow I got from there to here is what I always sort of think. You know, I sort of think, well, somehow I managed to figure that out and surmount that. And
well, step one, you know, you decided you went from six strings to four. If I only have four strings to tune, then that's better. You got lazy. Let's be honest.
Well,
you got lazy. You decided.
I'll tell you.
That's it.
I tell you. I tuned my guitar wrong for a year because I saw somewhere that you put your finger on the fifth fret and you tune across the neck, right? So the E string becomes the next string right across the neck. But nobody told me when you got to the B string, you're supposed to go to the fourth fret on a guitar and back it up. It's a semitone lower.
Yeah.
So I tuned my guitar straight across, fourths right across, right? So
For a year,
because I'm never playing anybody else's guitar. And I only found out because I played my friend's guitar and I went, hey, it's out of tune. So I put my finger on and I'm tuning it up and I broke the string because they were like big, fat, ugly strings we had. And so he's like, what are you doing? You broke
that's
my string.
Awesome.
And like, we got to go to Hamilton to buy a string, you know? So
that's great. But
the interesting thing about that tuning is that you can play the same chord anywhere on the neck and it works, right? Because it's all fourths all the way across the guitar. So it's actually the same as a bass, right? Because a bass is just fourths. You never.
Right.
So I wonder whether that ever sort of made me think when I got to bass, it was like, yeah, this makes sense to me.
Because you'd already been doing it.
I'd already been doing it for a year. So it's like, So I had to back up and go, I have to learn chords, a bunch of chords that I already learned. I had to fix because I'd learned them in the wrong tuning. So all of these things, you know, you go, any number of other things that maybe I've forgotten that you go slowed you down.
Right.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You want to learn a song. I had to put the needle on the record, listen to that part and then pick it up and put it back and keep trying it, you know, or wait till it comes on the radio and then try the chord that I thought it was. No, that's not it. Now I'll have to wait till the next time it comes on the radio, you know, like opposed to what you do now, you know, like there's a guy on the screen says, oh, here's how you do it.
Exactly.
Right. There's 100 different YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a different world to have learned in, and I'm not moaning about it. I just go, it's probably developed things in my own head that other people don't have, you know, younger people wouldn't have now as quickly. So you learn differently.
For sure.
Yeah. I'm going to jump on that about,
No, go ahead.
I just want to tell you about learning differently because I was telling Andrew, I wouldn't tell him the story. I said, but I want Steve Hogg on this show for one story. I don't care what else he tells us.
Uh-oh.
But there's one Steve Hogg
story. I was just about to ask about the story because I've been hearing about the story for the last week and a half.
And I didn't know there is a story.
No, there's a story. Right. And
you better set it up a little bit, Lance.
I know I've retold the story on Steve's behalf many a time, mostly to my teacher's friends. I have to explain to somebody or anybody who's listening. First of all, I was lucky. I met Steve. We were in a songwriters group. Steve was running it actually and suffering through, you know, all sorts of great and horrible songs.
That was fun. I liked it.
It was fun. It was actually became, I think, as much learning about songwriting as just having a really great group of musicians to get together with and hang out with, you know, and I mentioned to Amanda Kind a few weeks back that I was always struck by, you know, driving home that night thinking, gosh, I just heard three or four songs that are better than anything I'm listening to on the radio right now on the way home. And I just remember that was an eye opener for me about who makes it, who doesn't, is, you know, to your point, you better learn to do some other stuff because just being good doesn't really cut it or mean anything. But I was telling Andrew when he's like, oh, who's Steve Hogg? And I said, well, Steve Hogg is a guy that would tell me one of two things. He would say to me, Lance, that's a really good song. I don't like it, but it's a good song. Or he would say, hey, I really like that. That's not a good song, but I like it. And I would pay to come and sit in a room with this man who would constantly
be abused for how many hours.
Yeah, there was never, you know, that's technically a very good song. And I like that. You should do something with that. That was not there. It was like, oh, that's great. I love that. A terrible song. It will never get played anyway. But we had fun. So anyway, Steve, I'm going to remind you, I'll tee up the story because I tell the story primarily to friends of mine who teach. You told me, you and I were sitting in a coffee shop one time, and you told me back in the day, before kids were super precious and we all had more resilience, you told me about a buddy of yours who I believe they called Crazy Steve because he was this young guy who was very small. Was it? I can't remember. His name was Steve as well, but you did say his name was Crazy Steve. Oh, I got to tell you, then I'll tell you the story because it's quite amusing and it involves you. So there's this guy, Crazy Steve. You told me this story and I loved it. And he was small. And every school that we would go to, Crazy Steve would always pick a fight with the biggest guy in the school and he'd get his ass kicked. But after that, nobody would touch him. And that's where he was, Crazy Steve. Now, one day, Crazy Steve and I were, I think it was middle school, say grade 7 or 8. And they would have, back in the day when schools were still fun, they would have outdoor areas. And at this particular school that Steve Hogg went to, he had there was a fenced in area. That was the snowball area. If you're in there, you can throw snowballs at each other. And if you get hit, you can't cry about it because you were in that area. If you're outside of that area and get hit, you've got something to bitch about. But if you're in the area, don't come crying to a teacher. Are you remembering this story yet?
Now I am.
I feel like
we're halfway through the story.
This is your life. And so one day, now this is where you're going to pick it up, Steve. One day, you and Crazy Steve are walking to school. It's winter time and it's packing snow. And you decide, because you're grade 7-year-old knucklehead boys, you're going to throw snowballs at cars.
Yes.
We've all been there. I was once a little boy too. What happened after that, Steve? Do you remember?
Well,
do you remember the punishment and how awesome the punishment was?
Yeah, it was Dave.
Oh, okay. So Crazy Dave.
Crazy Dave.
Crazy Dave. Okay.
Who is also the guy who lived across the road and we played, I got fired from on my first gig. The guy lived across the road.
Oh, it all comes full circle.
Yeah. So it's Dave. And so, yeah, we decided we would throw snowballs at cars, which maybe, I don't know. It was just because, hey, they're moving targets and just looks so cool when they splat out the windows. Sure. So, yeah, we hit the teacher's car, which was Bessie Graham was her name. And she, of course, pulled over and stopped and got out of her car. And we're like, you know, we're like, a teacher? Yeah. Teachers drive cars? You know, like that.
You weren't expecting
we,
that.
We picked you're a dead that man. Car. You know, we're a dead man. It's like, and it was probably like, I don't know, a 1964. Oldsmobile or some big old car. And so then she said, report to me, come and see me, come to the office or whatever when we get there. So we got there and our punishment was that we had to go out into the designated snowball area at the back of the school every recess, and we were not allowed to throw snowballs. We were not allowed to pick up any snow at all, but we
were
had
the target.
To stay in that
you were the target.
And everybody in the school went, hey, it's Dave, the guy that picks on everybody, the guy that picks fights with everybody, and he can't do anything. So, and me, it would just happen to be like, oh, and, you know, and Steve.
And there's Steve.
So it was like, we might as well have just worn targets on our, so we had to stand there or turtle as much as we can for like a whole 20 minute recess while everybody pelts us. So it was like, to this day, I hate winter. You know, I hate snow. I hate winter. And I think that's what it's based in, because I just, as soon as snow falls, I'm just like, oh no. Cause that's, I'm sure how I felt then. If I saw one snowflake fall, I'd go like, mom, I don't feel well. I don't think I can go to school today. You know, a lot of sick days.
This is just the best.
We need more teachers like that now.
Yeah. Can you imagine how much trouble that teacher would be in? And now a couple of the details that I
remember saying
was just that, first of all, it's Crazy Dave. So when they went out there, there's no cell phones, but word spread like wildfire through the school these two yahoos, these two knuckleheads are free targets. They can't even throw back. It goes everywhere. Like it went, for those younger listeners, it went viral. And
yes, it did.
Anyway,
exactly.
Now, part of it that I remember you saying was that because it was Crazy Dave, and no one messes with Crazy Dave because he's nuts, that he everybody's is. Like, let's just hit Steve.
Free for all.
It's Crazy Dave. Yeah, we don't want to piss off Dave.
No, we don't piss off Dave. So poor Steve, who threw one snowball, is now getting crushed.
Because of Crazy Dave.
Yeah, I forgot about that part. It was just like he was fairly I have to, a quick other story, which I don't know whether I told you, just to describe Dave, is when we used to play at our house, or maybe his house, I can't remember. I think it was his house. Next door there was a dog, and the dog would lose its mind when we played in the backyard. It would like run up and down the fence, barking at us and jumping at the fence, like trying to get at us. And I don't know what it was.
It was the two strings you didn't tune properly. You're driving the dog nuts.
So my parents had cats. So I was like, I don't know from dogs. So Dave is like, this dog is like pissing me off. He's got to stop doing this. So one day the ball went into the ball goes into that yard. And I'm like, well, goodbye to the ball, because I'm not going over there.
No way.
Dave jumps over the fence and the dog just freaks out on him. So Dave freaks out on the dog, chases them all around the yard. The dog comes up and bites Dave. That's what happened. He bites Dave on the arm. Dave chases the dog all over the yard, grabs him, pins him down, and bites him back on the belly, like hard. So I heard the dog like go, yay, you know, like hurt the dog.
Yeah.
He lets the dog go. The dog runs to the far corner of the yard and just stands there looking at Dave. And Dave comes back over the fence and he wasn't hurt from the bite. That dog, when we came out, would just walk around the yard quietly whenever we were out there. He never bothered Dave again. And it was just like, that's the way he was, like you were saying with everybody else. Yeah. He went and looked for the tough guy, and he went look for Pete Hodgins, who was like the biggest guy in the class, and just went, I want to fight you. And they would meet after school and Dave would take a beating, but he would win. And after that, Pete was like, okay, don't mess with Dave. This just is a bit of an adjunct to that story. But
did you bring the ball back though? Did you bring the ball back?
Yeah, I think we got the ball back. Good. Yeah. So that's the important part. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah, crazy thing.
That's
there.
All I'm thinking about. Did the ball come back?
Wait,
I'm again. That's
but,
awesome.
But yeah, so Dave and I, we carried on various bands. Actually, if you look at my Facebook page there, Lance, the cover photo
right
on there, is there's a band playing, the three of us playing when we're 15 years old, and that's Dave playing the other guitar there.
Oh, okay. We'll have to check that out.
That's color photo from 1965, one of those
nice
oddities.
Very cool.
We carried on until we split into different bands, and you know, sort of I still talk to him now. He was working for IMAX for a long time.
Nice.
Cool.
Nice. So we've got some new music coming out from you shortly. If I can go back to what you're saying, you're recording and things.
I don't really know what I want to do with it. I feel like I just, you know what it's like? You have to write, like you just go, this is coming out of me
right
one way or the other. And it's really interesting to have the tool of something like Logic now to compare again to when I was a kid and I wrote a song and just went, well, if I want to do something with this song, then I'm going to have to do a demo and send it to the record company and try and get their attention and try and, you know, maybe get a record deal, which I did do. But even though it didn't come true, it was like you were storming the castle in those days where you just went, I'm outside the castle. No one's going to let me in. Trying to get somebody's attention, trying to throw your cassette over the wall so that maybe somebody will listen to it. So now it's like you can do, you know, the kind of production you can do on your own computer in your home. You know, if I heard that, brought myself 14-year-old self in now to listen to that, you know, it would be jaw dropping to go, look what you can do. You have every possibility, every instrument available, you know.
Yeah. Mics, amps, the whole bit.
Yeah. Like everything. And you can, again, if you want to even send it to Australia to your friend who's a great guitar player and say, can you put a track on here for me?
Yeah.
You know, all of that, like it's just too fantastic to imagine from the point of view of the way I was when I was a kid. So the fact that now I have that at my disposal really amazes me that I can take any song and go somewhere with it. You know, before we went on here, I was like listening to a voice memo that I did on the porch about, I don't know, a year or so ago, something I hummed into it. And then I wrote some other lyrics the other day and I went, oh, these two things could go together. And I put up a Logic track and I'd put a tempo down. I was like just starting that song and going like, okay, I'm putting up some scaffolding here to build with, right? And you go, that will eventually hopefully get finished. And from our songwriting class, right, the hardest part of songwriting is finishing the songs.
Right.
Everybody can start with a good idea, but all the work is finishing. It's like somebody walking along, putting up framing for a house and go, yeah, that was a good idea. I'm going to go and do another one over here. Now I've got, you know, a graveyard of frameworks. You know, you have to grab them and you have to finish the damn thing.
Yeah. And then edit.
You know, yeah, well, that's true. All of that work has nothing to do with the creative process, right? And that's the hard part. Whenever I find I'm working my engineering, I've got some part I want to play, guitar or bass or something, and I go, oh, that's great, I really like that part. Okay, input. No, I need a cable. Okay, I need a cable. Get it plugged in. Okay, I'm not getting any sound in that input. What's going on? Okay, so I'm, well, what's going on? You do all this stuff, and you finally get, okay, I'm gonna choose this amp and this microphone and go up. And then you go, what was that I was gonna do? And it's gone, that's right? Funny.
Yeah.
And I find an when I have to change hats, which is another thing we used to use in songwriting, the two hats thing. It's like when I have to put on the other hat and be the engineer, I have to empty my creative side of the brain to do that. It's like now we're in left brain and we're going to do functional, practical things here. And then I come back to the creative part and they're like, no, I forgot it. I'm sorry. I got bored. I moved on.
Yeah.
So whenever I worked, it was always good, like I said at the beginning, to be able to work with somebody who was technically adept and who liked doing that, liked the recording process and all the gear and all the stuff. And so I'd go, this is what we need to do. And they go, okay, we do this and put this, plug this in here. Okay, go. And I do the playing and the arranging and so on. And they would make sure it sounded good. And that was the best type of relationship to have for me. And I've had several people that I've worked with like that, who we had a nice balanced relationship of, which, you know, all relationships, if they're balanced, they do well. So I think now when I'm having to do it myself, I'm having to get better at going, holding on to one thing while I'm doing the other. And like you say, you probably are having the same issue, Lance. It's like, it is hard if you're one sort of minded to be able to be the other. But as I said, to have the tool available is fantastic. And I think I'm getting better at it and getting better at throwing the idea down and then coming back and going, okay, now let's make this sound better. Let's edit. Let's do all those things that I shouldn't have, you know, you shouldn't be doing when you're in the creative mode, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful agree. Thing. It's hard. I just found it. It's fine. I find it hard to edit. Like when you write a song, and if the song's half decent at the start, it's hard to go back, at least for me. Because you start working on other things, like how do I play this better and rhythm and all that other stuff. And then eventually you go back and say, oh, that word doesn't, I don't like that word, but it was working. So you use it. You know, there was a song that I was performing for like 2 years before I actually got to record it. We recorded it with Sam. And in the studio, I changed the last line because it always bothered me. I had the last line, Send in the Clowns, which is an old, old stage reference back. I just thought it's too old. No one's going to understand
Stephen Sondheim.
Of Sondheim, just Send in the Clowns. And I thought, I got to update. This is not contemporary at all. So anyway, I changed it. Right. And then the guys in the band were like, that's not, you've never sang that line before. I said, I know, it always bugged me. And if I was a decent editor at all, it would have been done far before getting to the studio, is my point. So,
But it doesn't matter when. It doesn't matter when it happens. Like if you open your mouth to sing that line and you suddenly go, no, I'm going to say this. And then you go, that's better. It doesn't matter when it happened. Like as long as it is a better thing. Songwriting is making decisions, right? It's like you're always deciding, is this the right word, the wrong word? What is? Is this a good line? Is this a bad line? You always got to be deciding, am I happy with this? If not, then I'm going to change it. If I'm going to change it, what am I changing it to? You know, like you're always trying to make those decisions. And even at the point where you finish the song, you know, you're always sort of looking back at it and going, that line always bugged me, but I didn't have any better ideas. I saw Paul Simon talking about Bridge Over Troubled Waters. And he said he had the song and he didn't have that last verse, sail on silver girl, sail on by. And they needed an extra piece on the end. So in the studio, he came up with this idea to do this kind of different melody at the end and these other lyrics that he had sort of laying around for possibly another song. But he was like, oh, I could use that here. So he said, I really don't like that part of the song. He said, it always looks like the song is here and I've got this piece stuck on it. And it seems to stick out to me. And of course, all of us are just going, oh, that's like genius. You know, it's like,
sure,
I love that part. And you just go, it all sounds like it's supposed to be, it's like meant to be, right? But for him, from the inside, looking at it, he's like, no, it's just like your last line. It's just like, that was never there at the start. So it never felt right. But of course it's recorded and now it's like closed. Stamped. It's stamped and closed. You know, like they said to an author, do you ever go back and read your books? He's like, no, they're tombstones.
Yeah, because that's good.
They're on the shelf. I can't change them anymore. They're dead to me.
Yeah. Right.
Like the creative process is no longer in play. So, you know, you go, thanks, I had a good time, but, you know, I'm moving on. And I used to say in songwriting, your next song is your best song is your next song. Like you're always, you always feel like that's the one I'm being drawn towards. That one, yeah, that's all right. But that's, it's hard to stay there and finish it when you're already looking, you know, you're already looking at something else.
Yeah. It's just the creative process. It's kind
of like,
okay, that's, that's done. I've got a new focus. I've got a new muse.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I still use stuff that we talked about in that, you know, I bring songs to my band and they want, you know, it's like, hey, we're going to stop on this thing. And then the next verse, they wanted to stop again. I said, no, you know, I remember Steve, you and I had a conversation about that, that if you have an interesting creative idea musically, then, but don't overuse it. You don't have to, you know what I mean? If you have this lick or a stop in a song, it's great, but don't do it every single time because it's too much. And I've used that. And, you know, conversely, then I sit down lyrically and I talk to Amanda and she's like, oh, it's all about repeat, repeat, repeat. I'm like, okay, you two guys. Are but yeah, lyrically, she's talking about, right, in pop anyway.
Yeah, pop.
Well, yeah, in pop, no one ever went broke repeating themselves. So,
That's why I that's my running joke is like, I'm trying way too hard in lyrics when I hear, you know, baby, 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 and it's an entire song or whatever. I'm like, what
you have to be effective with it. You have to go, you know, imagine that it's got to be, that you've got to be the one listening to it. I think you can repeat yourself to the point where you go, if I did it again, this is when you got to hand them the surprise. Like it's almost the three times rule, like do it three times, right. But if you do it four, it's too many. So you do the three and you just go, now I'm going to change it. And maybe I'll do that, repeat that chorus twice. But when I get to the last chorus, now I'm going to change one word, which now changes the meaning of it. Even though I've only changed one word, you've changed the meaning. So everybody gets a slightly different view of your idea. And you've taken them, you know, made it a little more three-dimensional that they can see a different view. Or maybe this is not what they thought it was. Maybe, you know, they didn't know the song was called Good Riddance, you know. They have a different view of the song.
Listen, I just think if you repeat a line like, you know, Time of Your Life, you should just damn well call the song Time
call
of
the
Your
song
Life.
That. Yeah, I agree.
Like that's, come on, guys.
Yeah, that's not fair.
It is.
Maybe do some more research. Jeez. I mean,
anyway, Steve, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of the other episodes, but we wrap these.
No, I haven't
up.
Yet.
No. Well, they're just scintillating. Anyway, we wrap these things up with something we call the lightning round. You get 10 questions asked of you. We give you the answers, sort of like shoes or boots, and you pick one. It is a inaccurate way of us getting to know you slightly better.
I'm nervous. And, okay.
No, don't be. Honestly, I don't understand this, but almost every person we've had on the show, this is like the easiest thing in the world, and everybody freaks out.
You've
about
got
it.
The answer.
They overthink it. Okay. They just go off the deep end. I know you're better than this. Okay, Andrew. 10 questions, lightning round with Steve Hogg. Here we go.
All right.
Let's hit it.
I'm ready.
You've got one band to listen to the rest of your life. Zeppelin or Eagles?
Eagles.
Jeans or chords?
Jeans.
On bass guitar, Paul McCartney or Flea?
Paul McCartney.
Maple Leaf Tavern or the Elma Combo?
Elma Combo.
Classic car or electric vehicle?
Ouch. That's pulling on two different sides of me there. I'm going to go classic car.
Nice.
Attaboy. Good job.
Cable TV or streaming?
Oh God. I hate sounding like I'm picking all the old options here.
It's okay.
Actually, I'm going to go streaming. More
golf
options,
or basketball?
Sorry, golf or basketball?
Golf or basketball.
Yikes. I don't do either. I'll go golf.
Camping vacation? Yeah. Camping vacation or beach vacation?
Camping.
Large group or solitary?
Oh God. See, that's hard. I'll go solitary, but it is hard.
And our last question, would you rather spend 2 hours watching a movie or reading a book?
I'm going to go with the book.
And that
good question
is the end of our rapid
fire. Did I pass?
I think you did. I think you did the best job of anybody. You didn't, there's no ums or
completely.
Ahs in there.
Most people are putting yourself into different scenarios and just trying to walk through it. And
well, there's definitely close. Like a lot of them are just, you know, they're like this and it's just, in certain circumstances, you go, yeah, I'd pick this. But, you know, it's like you say golf and basketball. I just go,
that's
hockey.
Not my thing. You yeah, know? Exactly. You know what? I should have put hockey in there. Yeah. Any so, good Canadian would have done, but
yep.
I'm sorry.
I'm a hockey guy all the way. So that's all right. That was fun.
Gosh, I guess that's been another episode of Backstage Lowdown.
Guys, Wow. Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate you taking the time to hang with us.
That
today.
Was awesome.
That was nice to meet you, Andrew.
Yeah, and nice to meet you as well,
and,
Steve.
And hopefully I get to see you in three dimensions at some point.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to get together for a coffee or a beer or whatever is wet on that particular day.
Yeah, well, and I haven't seen Lance in forever. I don't know. I think saw you at the golf place there, Westmount, at last time I think I saw you.
Yeah.
And that's got to be a few years ago.
It was a long time ago, but yeah, one of these times I'm going to sneak into one of your gigs uptown Waterloo. I let you announce them on Facebook. So that's great. I'd love to come out. And
hang. Please do. I'm starting to post again. So come on down and
excellent.
I'll be very happy to see you. All right.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate
it. Fun, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the time. All Thank right. you. Bye,
everybody. Thanks for listening.